UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast in the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant pregnant co-host, Zach Moore. What sound is that? I don't even know what that is.
I don't know.
Excellent.
King Kong lives, well, everybody!
King Kong lives.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness we have a sequel to discuss today. Joining us to discuss that sequel is our guest from last time, Tom Elliott of the Twilight Zone podcast. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Just a little disclaimer. When I said to Zach, you've got to get me on for King Kong 1976. He was like, okay, but you got to do King Kong Lives as well. So this is me paying the piper. Here
it's
I
a package
am.
Deal, my friend. So
what? You don't love this movie? You don't think this is as good as King Kong 1976? Tom, are you showing your hand?
There's a reason I'm drinking a beer right now, just to kind of get me through it.
So Brandon, I know that you didn't even know, you hadn't seen these films until just for this podcast. But Tom, when did you become aware that there was a sequel to the 1976 King Kong?
It's only in the last couple of years, you know, and it was literally because I was probably looking for a DVD of this or something, and it popped up on Amazon or eBay or wherever I got it, and I was like, I was not aware of that at all. So I bought it, and it sat unwatched for a while, but here we are. So yeah, it was some time. I wasn't aware of this at all when it first came out.
How many times have you seen it now?
Once.
I've seen this a few times over the years. It's very possible I might have seen this more than the 76 version, because it was like on cable back when I was a kid and taped it off TV. And I remember it, and I was like, this is weird. But, you know, it's so strange because it starts off with, you know, the climax of King Kong 76, mm-hmm. which is a genius, shrewd move on their part to kind of have, you know, budget and remind you of all these things and of the first film. And I think maybe, you know, we were talking about Son of Kong, and I thought, maybe this is what inspired me to say, you know what, they should have started Son of Kong with the end of the last King Kong movie. Like, that, mm-hmm. that would have made more sense. I mean, it would have made more sense there than here, because at least one of those characters is in this. It was in that film.
Yeah.
This is like, hey, remember this? Okay, we're done with that. Now, like, do they just need extra 5 minutes? I don't know. But
hey, one of the characters is still in this one. King Kong.
Yeah, he's back. He lives. But in spoilers, in a film called King Kong Lives, he dies at the end. So,
yes.
False advertising, we'll see. But, you know, let's get into some trivia. So, as we were talking about last time, very, very eccentric movie producer Dino De Laurentiis, he had been interested in making a King Kong sequel since the original came out. He said, quote, Steve McQueen made a picture in which he died at the end, but they made another picture with Steve McQueen. Many stars die at the end of a picture and then go on to the next picture. Kong is a star. We're going to have a new story, a new Kong. That's what he said back in the day. I think he misunderstood how movies work, but that's fine. The actor was fine.
So every movie Steve McQueen made was a sequel to the last movie he made.
Yeah. I loved
the sequel to Magnificent Seven, The Blob.
That's not how the Force works.
Okay, although now that we're sitting here talking about this, I'm sorry. Now I totally want to see, like, The Blob starring King Kong, right? Like, just
King Kong
every
versus
movie
The Blob.
Of King Kong versus The Blob. Not even, just King Kong as a teenager in high school.
he fits in just as well as 35-year-old Steve McQueen did.
I think, exactly. Movie, like, it works. Sorry.
Oh, man. So, you know, there's talk, you know, again, like the conversation around the 76 King Kong has kind of shifted toward the negative after it came out. And people say it was a flop or a disappointment. And it wasn't. It had a $24 million budget. It had a $91 million box office. So That's pretty good returns, right? That is not what held up the sequel. What held the sequel is all these various, the King Kong rights. Once again, right? Universal was going to make its movie. It never did, this and that. So Dino De Laurentiis got the rights back secured to make the sequel 10 years later. 1986, King Kong Lives. And they put that into the story, which we can talk about. One of the writers of the film, Stephen Pressfield, said that Dino De Laurentiis loved the whole idea of an artificial heart to bring back King Kong. And he told him, quote, this is Dino talking to the writer. He said, quote, I've been wondering for 5 years how to bring him back to life in a way people would accept. We'll talk
about that, Dino.
The science. We'll talk about the science of this in a minute, but that's the mindset going into this movie, right? So, Rick Baker did not return to play King Kong. We had Peter Elliott, who is a famous suit actor. He did movies like Gorillas in the Mist and other things. And then also George Yasumi played Lady Kong. So we have two different actors here, and they interact so much. You know, of course, you had to have two different suit actors. Now, as far as the human cast, Peter Weller was offered the part of the lead role, but he turned it down to be in a little film called RoboCop.
Mm.
Made the right choice, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kerwin, man, this the guy who plays what's his name? I forgot his name already.
Hank Mitchell.
Hank Mitchell, that's what it is. Yeah, because Sarah Connor keeps saying Mitchell. Sarah Connor, there it is. Lionel Hamilton, hot off the Terminator, right? I know what I'll do. I'll be in a King Kong movie. That's going to skyrocket my career. Now, Jessica Lange, you know, really put her on the map. So she was thinking same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the case, unfortunately, for Linda Hamilton. This is her quote after she saw the film, quote, I was stunned when I saw it. It was the most ridiculous movie. While we were filming, I never saw one full-size Kong, only a hand or foot. And I was acting against a huge blue screen most of the time. It was a hoot when I finally saw those monkeys flirt and bat their eyes. Then it horrified me for being so stupid. So, bad career move, Linda Hamilton. It's okay. Let's see. 5 years later, she'll be in Terminator 2 and be back on the map. So, so I love Linda Hamilton, right? I mean, from the Terminator, from this. But this other guy, Brian Kerwin, right? It seems to me they were trying to get like a Bill Pullman or Bill Paxton type guy. And they just settled on this guy because this, as far as I can tell, look, seemed like a nice guy, but really didn't have much career after this. And he's just an interchangeable nobody. So Lyndall Hamilton really is your star power.
That wasn't Aaron Eckhart.
If they ever remake King Kong Lives, Aaron Eckhart has to play this character. And he would. I mean, he'd see movies like I, Frankenstein and Battle Los Angeles. This is exactly the kind of movie Aaron Eckhart would appear in today. Now, when there's the big parade after the successful heart operation for King Kong, they're like, I call it a parade, but you know, all the people like the signs and gorilla suits dancing around. There's a sign in the background. It says, You Kong, Me Fei. That is, of course, a reference to Fei Rei from the original film. I thought it was a cool little Easter egg back there. This is the first film where King Kong is shown to eat someone.
Yeah.
He chews on a lot of people, but he chows down on some people in this one. And this is why I guess when I saw this when I was younger, so I'm like, yeah, King Kong eats people, but I guess this is really the only one really, really, really swallows someone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John Gierman, who directed the 1976 King Kong, actually don't think we mentioned him at all in the last conversation, but he, you know, he was famous for directing like The Towering Inferno and Shaft in Africa, actually. So movies like that. He returned to direct this film, the only returning, other than King Kong, the only returning person to work on the film. His son, Michael, died during the production. So he was grief-stricken by this, and he'd frequently just kind of wander off and go sailing or something instead of working on during the production of the film. So at one point, he was gone for days, and the film actually had to be completed by Charles McCracken. He was an uncredited 21-year-old documentary filmmaker. So a lot of that going on behind the scenes.
There's just been some tragedy in the families of people that have been making the King Kong movies. Like, holy smokes.
Yeah. Rough stuff. Rough stuff. And this was the last theatrical movie that John Gierman made. He made a TV movie called Dead or Alive in 1988, and then he retired that same year. But he did live on to the ripe old age of 89. He just died a few years ago. So, Dino De Laurentiis, after this film, he approached Lou Schreimer of a Filmation to develop an animated spinoff starring the son of Kong. So they had some ideas like King Kong be able to change his size. And he would travel around the world and to different planets and go underwater. and he'd have a submarine made out of giant coconuts and bamboo called the Coco Nautilus. But this pitch called Kid Kong never got off the ground, thank God. So
that's disappointing.
Shame.
If you thought this movie was crazy. Now, nothing came from this. I mean, the animated show or a proposed sequel with an actual Son of Kong, right? Because we have a living Lady Kong and Son of Kong at the end of this film. Because this had a $5 million box office on an $18 million budget. So that's, now Oof. That's a flop. That's not going to get Woof. You a sequel. Mm. So unfortunately, it is what it was. Now, the previous film, you know, it won an Oscar for special effects. This one was nominated for a Razzie Award for the worst special effects. And there's a documentary that I don't actually remember the name of it, but I think I saw it like on some streaming service, and it was with an actor who, again, I also don't remember the name of, so I clearly did my research for this part. But he was friends with Jeff Bridges and worked with Jeff Bridges on K-Pax, the movie with Jeff Bridges and Kevin Spacey. And mm-hmm. so he was talking to Jeff Bridges about making King Kong, and Jeff Bridges said, yeah, at the end of King Kong, Dino De Laurentiis came up to me and he says, I have two words for you, Kong 2. And Jeff Bridges says, and this is the punchline, he says, well, I have two words for you. You can imagine what those words are. Jeff Bridges did not return for King Kong 2. He only appeared in the stock footage. Now,
that's funny.
Last note, you know, we talk about the World Trade Center some in our last conversation. This film was set and scheduled to air on TBS on September 11, 2001. But it was later in the day, and TBS switched it out for a Chevy Chase film called Funny Farm. Due to the opening of this film being the climax of last film, World Trade Center. I totally understand why you want to take that out of the public consciousness for a while on that day of all days. So there you have it. There's your trivia. Not that much, because not a lot of people like talking about this film, but there's your trivia for King Kong Lives.
Okay, well, let's jump into this. I'm going to start, you know, I didn't hate this movie. So, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't offended by it. I thought it was just fine. I thought there was some interesting stuff in it. So, Tom, I'm going to pass it over to you. Why do you hate this film?
You know what? The thing is, I think you're probably right. I was hamming it up a bit at the beginning. I don't hate it. I think Kong can live in a kind of B-movie space, no problem.
Mm-hmm. No pun intended.
You know, the first movie was kind of... in this series was a kind of prestige picture, you know, mm-hmm. I think. And there's nothing wrong with a B-movie Kong. And I think, you know, get a couple of beers in me, get a couple of friends around. This is that kind of movie, I think. I think it's a terrible movie. I think it's a terrible sequel. But it's not boring. Mm-hmm. It's not like offensively bad to the point where you just sit like seething at it. You know, you can take the first movie on its own merits and just kind of cut it off there. It's so disconnected from that film that it's hard to get annoyed by the ridiculousness of it. So I don't hate it, you know?
Zach?
Yeah, that's a great point, Tom. It is so disconnected. Despite starting with stock footage from the first film, that's the only bit of connective tissue, really. And yeah, you know, for what it is, it's a schlocky movie, right? It's like if King Kong had continued the way Godzilla had continued, these are the kind of movies you would get. Mm-hmm. It is an absurd premise. Like let's be clear. Like King Kong, he didn't just die from a heart attack. He died from being machine gunned to death and falling hundreds of feet to the concrete to his death. Mm-hmm. So to think that you just replace his heart and he's fine is ludicrous. Yeah. And also he's been in a coma for like 10 years. Like, you're going to atrophy, man. Like, they even in this movie, they're like, he has to eat hundreds of pounds of protein each day. I'm like, how is he doing that when he's laying in Atlanta for some reason? Well, I don't know why they, you know, of all places, you know, it's like a Star Wars fan film. It's like, we don't have a lot of money. Let's go just shoot in the forest. Right. Same thing here. It's like, well, we don't have a lot of money. Can we have some people run around in the forest, right? In the military. So that's why we're totally removed from any kind of metropolitan area here. But you know, it's not as awful as its reputation. I think it's fun to point out how ridiculous it is. But there's some good things. You know what? It's cheesy, but it's kind of sweet to see King Kong finally have a love interest that was appropriate to him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I liked it a lot, and I actually kind of liked the scenes near the end where the civilians started chasing down Kong, right? So to me, it reminded me a lot of Jaws.
Brent, did you know who one of those civilians was?
I knew some of them. There was the guy from Darkman.
The guy from Darkman.
Yeah. And he was in, I don't know. I don't know the actor's name.
Was he in a Star Trek episode?
Yeah, he was. He was in a Deadwood episode.
Michael Forrest. Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I'm not good with names of actors.
Apollo. Apollo from Who Mourns Madness was the main guy who's tormenting, who's King Kong eats.
Oh, yeah, that is him. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, yeah. There was him, but yeah, I liked that stuff, and I liked that aspect of it. I mean, I like that the one guy's like, look, if we're going to kill him, we're going to kill him, but don't torture him, right? Because that's what hunters hunt, right? And I mean, I personally don't have any problem with people hunting, right? People can hunt for food and hunt for sport. But I like that aspect of it where they're like, okay, we're going to torture him, and the one guy's upset with it. I like that Kong got revenge on those people. So I like that whole sequence of it. You know, the barn dance sequence was kind of fun. You know, when he goes there and then they, you know, fall on the barn and whatnot.
You never know who's going to show up at a family reunion.
You never know who's going to show up at a family reunion. So, I mean, I thought the humor was tongue-in-cheek. They were having a good time with it. And, yeah, I thought this movie was pretty good.
Pretty good. Okay. I mean, I like it more than I thought, but I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, I mean, how are you qualifying that? Is it like me where I'm like, okay, get me a bit drunk and I'll have a bit of fun with it, or you're like, actually it's a good movie, you know?
Like, this is not okay, like, if you want, I'll give you my star rating. Like, I don't rate this thing like 4 or 5 stars or anything like that, right? But I mean, like, I enjoyed this movie, and like, mm-hmm. for spoilers for later on, like, there's other Kong movies that are going to come along where I'm like, that was a lot of fun. I mean, like, it's not a great movie or anything, but it was fun and it was enjoyable. And they're clearly having fun with the movie that they're making. Like, there's one that's going to come up in just a couple episodes where they do that, right? And it's like, this is fun and they're having fun with it. And that's what they were doing here. So, I mean, like, yes, it's completely ridiculous that this guy's been in a coma for 10 years and can just get up and wander around, right?
Break like, through chains and open up doors.
Yeah, exactly. And it also works for me being the type of campy sequel that it is, you know?
King Kong is maybe King Kong escapes, but this is arguably him at his most heroic, you know? I mean, he's like literally the scene like near the end where they're like having to help Lady Kong escape and the doors are going to close and then his arms come in and he rips open the door like, yeah, get her out of there, King Kong. Like, I don't know, like, there are a lot of hero moments for King Kong, especially when he's like destroying the military. Like, that's cool to see, because that one sergeant or whatever, the admiral or whatever that guy was, the general, that guy just hated these gorillas for no reason.
Right from the get-go.
And it was very nice to see him die at the end, so...
You know what I really liked? When they were operating on and putting the bionic heart in, and all the medical implements were like giant versions of the ones we actually use, like the big clamps that look like scissors and stuff like that. It was ridiculous. But you know, to give it its due, I think they gave a bit more sort of credence to the way Kong moves like an ape, you know, especially Lady Kong with the long forearms and that kind of thing. So, you know, they were trying.
I noticed that. I'm like, they brought Kong to life the way Rick Baker had wanted to, with the when he's walking around on the mountains and stuff, his forearms are like a real gorilla. He's moving around like that. I'm like, in this kind of movie, paying that kind of attention to that stuff, I was impressed. I had forgotten it because I just assumed like, oh, it's going to be even look cheesier and all that from the first one. And I mean, there are certain things that are definitely a step down production wise. Don't get me wrong, but that is an attention to detail that almost every other King Kong movie just completely ignores. So I appreciated that, but the most, the most absurd, all right, there's two absurd things. Well, there's a lot of absurd things. I'm sorry. But the ones that I specifically want to call out here, where he's eating the alligators. Okay.
Oh, they pick up, it's a tiny one there.
So it's a baby alligator in the wide shot because it's a guy in a suit. And then it's a close-up of just full-size alligator, like completely out of context, and then he eats him. But there's a reaction shot of a frog. Did you guys notice this?
Yes, yes.
The frog's like, oh my God. Like, see, is the frog reacting? He's like, I hope he doesn't eat me. Like, what's this? Such a bizarre. I found it very interesting. Maybe that's because of that, you know, that documentarian guy had to pick up the movie. Maybe he's like, let's shoot some wildlife. It was just such a bizarre cutaway to a frog reacting to King Kong eating alligators. So I had
what if it was just what if it was supposed to be another alligator and his eyes bug out? Like, that was the intention.
Oh, like, they're like, we can't do that. Get a frog to do it. The other one is, okay, this might be the worst line of dialogue in any film.
Is it the birthday suit?
Well, no, that's a great line.
But that is not a great line. That is a dumb line.
The enemy is approximately 50 feet tall, 50 feet wearing tall the birthday, and suit.
Birthday suit. That's look, so bad.
Military people talk this way, Brandon. Okay, but no, the worst line is when Linda Hamilton calls Mitch over, and he's like, "Are you sure about this?" And she says, "We're primates.
We're primates too."
What? What does that even mean?
Like, what that means, Zach, is you and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals.
Oh.
So let's do what they do on the Discovery Channel.
Hey, you know what? Good on him. He asked for consent. She gave it, and they got down to business in her sleeping bag. You know, that's fantastic.
Very big sleeping bag.
This is
too.
Why I have such a crush on Little Hamilton, right? The Terminator, King Kong Lives, you know? I mean, seeing this as a young child, that was very formative experiences for me. But I just, like, that is the most absurd thing to say in that situation.
I'll tell you what I liked. Because the scaling was so off some of the time. Like, when did they bring Lady Kong back in a plane and her feet were kind of sticking out the back when they opened the door? But like in the scene before, you'd seen that he was actually walking up and down next to her. But then you see it out the back and her feet are just sticking there. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves as well. But at the end, when she has the baby, and the baby is sitting on top of her, and it's just
dry.
Like a man in a suit. Yeah,
and he's but dry. Like,
but when you compare the scales of them, the baby was tiny compared to it. It could have walked out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It didn't need to be born. It could have just walked out.
Yeah, because it's as big as King Kong's hand, right? So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So the introduction of a Lady Kong. Right. Ever since you had Son of Kong, right? You're like, well, who's his mom? Well, here we are. There were obviously females of this species. They've existed for presumably millennium or whatever. They're all as old as dinosaurs. Who knows, right? That's fine, I guess. But where is Borneo? You know, because there's one line of dialogue. It's in that party scene. You probably blink and you miss it. But it's Mitch, and he's like, so the theory is that Borneo and Kong's Island broke off the same continent. I'm like, that's your explanation of why they just randomly find this female ape? Extremely convenient, mm-hmm. by the way, because it's the same exact day they need a blood transfusion for King Kong.
Very convenient.
Like decades, convenient. Hundreds of years in human civilization, they've never found another Kong, but like the same day. Like, oh, here's
he
one right here.
He takes a nap on her. He takes a nap on her hand. Yes. Yeah, I can appreciate what you guys are saying. Yes, these things are cheesy, but for it didn't bother me to the point of like not liking this film. Like it worked for me in the type of story that they were telling. So and I'm not sure why. I guess I don't know why. Like it just didn't bother me. Like normally this would probably be something that would, you know.
Well, I thought the redneck stuff was bigger and more annoying than it was. It really wasn't that much, honestly. Mm-hmm. There was the stuff like he gets hit in the face with a golf ball. I'm like, what is a slapstick comedy? Like, oh, mm-hmm. Dad's gonna kill me, right? He steps on some teenager's car. I'm like, this is like from some teen comedy of the 80s. So a bunch of random stuff that are kind of didn't fit the tone. But again, the tone is all over the place in this movie. This is an open heart surgery on King Kong, acting like it's the most serious thing you've ever seen. And then you get King Kong like, here's a snake to Lady Kong, like flirting and stuff. So it's all over the place. So it's really hard to complain about tone when the movie doesn't even know what it's doing.
What it's doing.
Yeah. And Linda Hamilton's so kind of deadpan and so serious, you know.
She just got off the Terminator, man. She just worked for James Cameron. She's like, this is serious.
Yeah. Whereas Hank is just this kind of a comic character, really, a bit of a goofball, but I don't know, his character journey is so weird because he's like this greedy kind of opportunist at the beginning, but then by the end of it he really cares for Lady Kong and stuff like that. It's so bizarre.
Well, they should have spent more time like forming some kind of bond between him and Lady Kong, So then he's like protective over her. And because they act like, you're right, because the second half of the movie, he's like, you leave her alone. You, and he's all like very protective of her. But at the beginning, he's like, hey, I'm going to sell you my ape. I'm going to get rich. Woo. Like they made him Carl Denham and then they made him Jack Prescott, like in the same movie with no gear shift. Also, you know, Linda Hamilton's character just is hooks up with him just because they're looking for Kong together. Hey, sure, you know, because she didn't like him at
first.
Got
some time to kill. Yeah. You know, what else are you going to do?
It's cold outside, baby. It's cold outside. So anyway, it's the human characters, you know, we were talking about them last time. They were so strong. They're weak this time, but they are still like, maybe it's just because I like Linda Hamilton or whatever. I'm like, all right, these characters are fine. The general guy was entertaining. Like he was over the top, but he was entertaining. So I'm like, I will take these characters again over your standard monster movie characters. These are all fine, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All in all, I think it's a fine movie. I mean, it was entertaining. So, I mean, there's not much in-depth story here, right? I mean, clearly we've got the sequel coming next, Son of Kong, right?
Of course, of course.
Yeah. So we're going to have our third one, and that'll be fine as well. So
yeah, I mean, because remembering it, I was like halfway through King Kong, like falls in the river and like blood. I'm like, what's going to happen the rest of the movie? Like, you know, because I thought that was them on the run and like the government would be looking for them. You know, I mean, that makes sense. You know, when they find all the dead redneck hunters, they're like, oh, Kong, you've killed. Now they're going to kill you. I'm like, I think he killed a lot of people in the first movie, too. So I don't think that's not really a question. Like, you know, between all the property damage.
Yeah, but he didn't eat them.
That's true. That's crossing a line that we cannot. But yeah,
rip one in half and eat the other one.
It's weird. You know, King Kong, it's in this weird, it's got 1 foot in like cinematic history, groundbreaking, greatest movie of all time territory, and another foot in monster movie, right? And this one is clearly more on that side than the other. And like your mileage may vary. You know, I don't know. Like, I love King Kong. I love this character. I don't, you know, see this. And I think it goes back to what you said, Tom. It's so disconnected from other things. I don't feel like it ruins. This existing does not ruin the original film or even the 76 film for me. It's just another weird side tangent for this character.
That's like King Kong escapes. I think Kong can quite happily live in that B-movie environment. And that's why, you know, you're right, Brandon. I think it's a bad sequel in that you would want a sequel to kind of continue with what the first one was doing and have the same tone and all that. But as a B-movie Kong, it kind of does what you would want a B-movie Kong to do. You know, it's a bit of a laugh. It's silly. You have a good time with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's the kind of disconnect. You know, it's a bad sequel, but a kind of good. I don't want to use the word good too much, but it's a kind of fun B-movie Kong, which, yeah. So I see where you're coming from, Brandon, absolutely.
See, like, for me too, like, I don't even consider it a bad sequel. Like, I think it's just fine. I don't know. Like, I enjoyed it. Like, I touted, it's been a while since I've brought this old chestnut out, right? But, I mean, Children of the Corn 4, right, has nothing to do with the original three that, you know, and I think it's the best one of them, right? Like, the best one of the sequels and whatnot, you know? So, I mean, it's a weird sequel, but like once you get past the fact that he's been in a coma for 10 years somehow, I don't know, it's to me, it's once you get past that, it's fine. I mean, that's the story
it's
that
like
they're telling.
Once you get past the fact that the earth blowing up through apes back in time in a spaceship, Escape from Planet of the Apes is a great movie, right?
Yeah,
once
you have
to get over that. So once you get over the fact that King Kong fell to his death after being machine gunned, you know,
this is not as good
transplant.
As Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
No, thank you. At least we have you on record for that. Not at all. But, it, you
Escape
know, King
from
Kong, similar to
better.
Planet of the Apes, they keep writing themselves into these, well, what do we do now? I don't know. Give him a heart transplant, I guess. So
there's
just so many places you could have gone. Like, and you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, King Kong versus Orca does appeal to me. Like, like what is you fight a shark, just go on land and you don't have to fight him anymore. Like, I don't know. Like, we didn't see, you know, we talked about there not being any other creatures other than that snake in the last movie. Like, this one, like, it would have been cool to see him fight something, but then we have the other
like,
Lady
what,
Kong.
Though? They're in North America. What, are they going to fight? Find just a 90-foot bear?
Maybe.
I don't know.
That'd be cool.
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. <It's, laughs> I don't know. It's interesting that this is, like, bombed at the box office. Like, I mean, it's not great. But you think people would have gone and seen it. But maybe it was so long after the 76 King Kong that, you know, maybe if it had come out
there's
sooner.
No momentum.
Yeah.
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 So it's like Tron Legacy for the Jeff Bridges tie-in, right? They come out 30 years after the original. I love Tron Legacy. I think it's really great. Great soundtrack by Daft Punk too, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't click with people. Maybe if it had come out sooner, it would have. But I don't know. Like, momentum is important. Look at the Star Trek films, right? Let's have one every 4 years. Why aren't people coming to see them? Because people don't even know. They forgot about them by now. So 10 years later, and like you said, Tom, the first one was like prestige. Like, this is like real cinema, serious, groundbreaking 70s. And this is schlock. So it's like there is a disconnect there too. So when people were probably, they heard about this, they were like, well, that doesn't sound like the one I kind of liked from 10 years ago. Never mind. So I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's where bad sequel comes in for me, because can you imagine that this is the same world that first movie happened in? I can't. But once you make that break and just say, okay, it's not that, but what is it? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
They should have done what Toho did and just, this is a King Kong. It's different. But this is, here he is doing his thing. So there you go. All right. Well, any final thoughts, anyone? Before we move on to our questions.
I'm good. Tom?
No, go ahead.
So how many times does Linda Hamilton scream in this movie? I put down 0.
Yeah, I didn't catch any either.
I mean, there were other people screaming, but according to the rules that I've put down, the scream queen count must be the female main character. And she's a very serious character in this, so she's not screaming. So so we are stuck at 112. But Tom, let me ask you. Out of 5 Empire State Buildings, or World Trade Centers in this case, how many would you give King Kong Lives?
I will go with, if I gave halves, so it'd probably be like a 2.5. I'll give it a 2 because I don't think it's a good movie. You know, it kind of, and like I said, it fails as a sequel, but it's kind of fun. So I'll give it a 2.
What about you, Brandon?
I'm going to give it a 3. You know, it's enjoyable. I would, I'd pop it on again, and I'd enjoy it. And I definitely, Tom, if the three of us ever get together, we should crack open a couple beers and record a commentary for this one. What do you think? We'll set this up patrons exclusive.
A true test of our friendship, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to give it a 2 as well. It exists. You know, it's, I wouldn't mind rewatching this again one day. It's been years since I've seen it, and I can go years again without seeing it. But to see King Kong be able to live a little longer, see more of the country, you know, get a appropriate mate, fight the military, get to see his son. You know, he defends his mate giving birth to die. Like, it's a very honorable way to die. So, you know, it's a good ending for his character anyway, I guess. I mean, he's going to die in almost every version of these movies. So it's a good way to go out if you got to go out. So, yeah, it's 2 out of 5 for me. Well, Tom, is this franchise fatigued?
You know, this may surprise you, but I'm going to say no, because much as I think the first movie is self-contained, there was no need for a sequel. They made one. It wasn't a good sequel. It didn't continue with what the first movie was doing. I think there is a place for B-movie Kong, and you can do stupid stuff in the next movie as well, and you could do stupid stuff in the movie after that, and they would probably just be fun movies. So I would watch a sequel to this, sure.
What about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm going to say no, definitely not fatigued yet, because, I mean, they left it open for the Son of Kong sequel, obviously, by having a baby. But I'm thinking, you know, hear me out. Robo-Kong.
Robo-Kong, that's right.
Robo-Kong, okay? So they bring him back to life, right? Half man, half gorilla, all cop.
Very good.
Right, team him up with Linda Hamilton's character, and then they're fighting crime.
As long as he has a jetpack, that's what I want to see. Yeah. But
this stuff writes itself.
I'm gonna say no as well, because now we've lowered the bar for King Kong. Like, there's like, well, sure, do whatever you want at this point, right? You know, we have a little baby Kong. He can grow up and be another King Kong. We have another King Kong adventure, right? Have him fight Godzilla or something. You know, like, let's do that. Let's I would have loved to see a Suitmation Godzilla from the 80s fight a Suitmation King Kong from the 80s. Like, to me, when my mind, when you say King Kong, those are the ones and Godzilla, those are the ones that come to mind first. So that would have been incredible. So what a missed opportunity then. But yeah, I'd say no. I mean, as ridiculous as it may sound, let's see another one of these at this point. So.
Excellent. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Thank you, guys. Just check me out at thetwilightzonepodcast.com and give the show a try if you haven't yet. But thanks so much for having me back on, guys. It's always difficult these days with time differences and so on, but any chance I get to do this with you two is always a pleasure, and it's always a good time. So thank you, and I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of your journey with the King Kong movies, because, you know, I loved them. And I really thank you for the opportunity to talk about these two. So thank you.
Zach, where can people find you when you're not opening up your sleeping bag for the Aaron Eckhart type guy?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also host of another podcast here on the network, Sasswatch, where Ken Tripp and I talk about all things Bigfoot multimedia. And I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S, talking about each and every episode of that young Superman show. And Brandon, when you aren't giving birth in a barn, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Mattella. You can find me here on the network with a show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And I've got a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where we cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. Come on, guys, give us a rating and review over on iTunes. We need it. Share us. Tell everybody all about us. Thank you so much to Tony Robinson and Ken Tripp for being executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. Well, that's all we got for you this week. Until next time, when we cover the 1998 animated musical remake, The Mighty Kong.
No, we're not doing that.
Come on, Zach. Let's do it.
We have to stick to our rules, Brandon. It was not theatrically released. Thank God.
Hey, we discussed this. You know what? We talked about this when we're going to do Psycho. We're going to do the TV movie called Bates Motel.
Oh, and Psycho 4 was actually straight to TV, wasn't it? So, but it has to be live action if it's TV. I can find some rule where you don't have to talk about that. I haven't seen that. I've heard nothing but horrible things. So,
I mean, it's got a 1.7 average on Letterboxd.
I've heard,
right?
It makes this film look like the 1933 King Kong. Okay, so we're not doing it. We'll be back next time talking about Peter Jackson's epic King Kong 2005.
Excellent. Until then, look, it's a baby Kong.
We're primates too.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.